Welcome to Tampa Bay FM's Synergy Connection, where life as you currently live it can be transformed into the life you've always dreamed of. Understanding your synergistic connections is the pathway to your emotional, physical, spiritual, and mental wellness. Let's begin connecting the dots. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Synergy Connection Show. I have as a returning guest, Kristen Gieselin, who is a consultant, intuitive, and mindfulness mentor. She has catalyzed positive change for thousands of individuals and hundreds of nonprofit organizations, and she's available for personal and business consultations, mentoring, custom workshops, and presentations. This morning, we're going to tackle a topic that I think applies probably to almost as many men today as it does to women, but the topic is self-care and understanding what self-care actually means. So welcome back to the show today, Kristen.
Thank you, Lucy. As usual, I am excited to return, and this topic is such an important topic, so I'm really glad that we're going there today.
Yeah. I looked up a statistic that I wanted to start the show with because this was pretty amazing to me, and I've been in the mental health field for a very long time. But according to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, 1 in 8 women experiences depression during their lifetime. And that's not a small number at all. So, and this is twice the rate for men. So we're going to start there. And what do you think the reason women experience it twice as much as men?
Well, before we even get into that conversation, I would venture to say that this is depression that made it into some kind of statistical log, and there's probably at least twice as much depression going on as reported
right.
through this thing. So,
right.
So just to start there, and maybe the factor of why it's so much more frequently reported for women would be twofold. One, I think women are more likely to allow others to know when they are experiencing depression than a man
mm-hmm.
would be.
Mm-hmm.
And the factors that we will be going into this morning about women's natural, it's sort of like the downside of the upside of being a woman, that because we do connect naturally, compassionately with other people, we want to take care of them.
Right.
But on the downside of that is, can we do all of that and still take care of ourselves?
Right. I mean, I even think back, and you had siblings, right?
No siblings.
You were an only child? Okay. Well, I had 2 younger brothers. And, you know, I remember very clearly that it was my job to help take care of them. So you're taught almost out of the gate, you know, as a child, if you're female, that you're going to be taking care of someone. And I just happened to be the oldest, and therefore I got my brothers. But I also remember that back in those days, it was much more common to get dolls and little cooking stoves and things that were, you know, toys that nurtured in some way or other. And my brothers got guns, and they had more fun with caps. Remember the old cap gun?
Mm-hmm.
So they had a great time with that. Davy Crockett was popular at one point during their childhood, and so they had coonskin caps, and they ran around, you know, and pretended they were on horses. And that's what I wanted to do. But it wasn't that I wasn't allowed to do it, because I was very much a tomboy, but it was more that the expectation was somehow there that I would be the helper and that they would just get to go play. So
right.
I don't know whether you saw that with friends.
Yeah,
or not.
Well, you know, I think there's just enough of a difference in
mm-hmm.
our ages, because
mm-hmm.
we're about 20 years apart.
Right.
That culture was shifting by the time I was a little girl. It was just the beginning of a lot of change, because
right.
I was born in 1963.
Right.
Okay, so the sexual revolution was the mid-60s. And, you know, feminism was really starting to gain momentum and come into its own. However, I did have those very girly things. I had the cook stove refrigerator ensemble. You know, I did
what
have that.
What color was yours?
I think it was brown, you know. And And the cool thing was you could put water in the back of the sink, the sink part, and it actually worked. The water actually came out. There was like a little tank for water.
Oh, my gosh.
I loved that.
Oh, my goodness.
So I loved my little kitchen. But I also had a cap gun, and I had cowboy boots, and I had a whole cowgirl outfit. And I loved to run around the neighborhood and play cowboys and Indians. So I did do that. And it's interesting because I've reflected back a lot on the kind of woman that I am, and I feel that it was influenced by growing up in Florida and swimming and sailing and sort of testing my mettle in the physical world maybe a little more than some girls ever got a chance to.
That's very possible. I mean, I grew up in Indiana. I moved south. I lived in Mississippi and Arkansas as a teenager, and then moved back north again. But I would say our testing came more in cold weather. We had snowball fights and, you know, forts made out of snow and things like that. So there was a fair amount of doing things with the guys. But like I said, I think as I was growing up, the unwritten rule was that you will go into a helping profession.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably should have become a doctor based on everything that is about me today. That's what I most likely should have been. But it was, you know, back at that time, it was teaching, nursing, you know, social work to some degree. And so that's the field that I chose, was, you know, going more into psychology and then graduate school for that. But there's so many more opportunities that are open today. And somebody that I had lunch with today, in fact, was saying that both of her children don't want to ever have children, and that, you know, they don't want the responsibility of having children, but they also have their careers and they've spent a lot of time working on that, and they just want to focus on, you know, their jobs. So I do think that culturally we are shifting. There may be some issues that will come out of that by us not having families. I don't think you need to have, you know, 2.4, but I think sometimes not having any children at all creates its own issue, you know, as we age. I don't know about you, but I'm sort of thinking that that can be a problem. And plus the fact that there are a lot of cultures out there that are putting tremendous amount of focus on having large families.
Yeah, I don't really think that much about that part. I know that I had a child, I have one child who's now 23, and he was the best baby in the world. And I thought, I will never, if I have another child, I will never have a baby who's as easy as this baby is. I just knew that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then the circumstances of my life didn't open up to, you know, create, you know, any more children. Just wasn't the, you know, all the moon was not in the seventh house. It just did not line up. Not that I hadn't thought about it or wouldn't possibly enjoy it had it lined up or made that choice. So I definitely was, you know, all of the time I was raising my child, I was also doing career.
Mm-hmm.
So it was juggly, you know, it was very juggly for me, especially as a single woman,
right,
to juggle all of that.
So with, you know, looking at just this whole concept of depression, whether it's male or female, because certainly we've seen a lot of men become caregivers at home. They become the Mr. Mom, you know, like Robin Williams, you know, when he did Mrs. Doubtfire, which I loved as a movie. But, you know, that has certainly happened over the last probably 15 years. And I think a lot of children have grown up with their dads at home and their moms working. So that's why I'm saying, you know, the caregiving is on both sides. I think we have just as many men today, whether they're suffering from depression or not, I don't know, but they are having to make sure that they take care of their needs. And it can't all revolve around mom coming home from work and taking care of the children and the house and the laundry and the cooking and things that are now sliding over to men. So there's that balance, and that's part of what we're going to talk about is caregiving is a matter of balancing whatever's on your plate, making sure that the balance is there.
Well, what comes to my mind is what I had mentioned before we went on the air, Lucy, that I've done both. I've had fair, you know, periods of my life where I was working, you know, for years at a time, 40 hours a week outside of the home. these days I spend more time, I have more what I call domestic goddess time,
mm-hmm.
because I'm working for myself. So, you know, I'm not, the time that it takes to dress and travel to and from work is taken right out. So then it's, you know, how many hours on a given day am I committing to domestic goddess life and how much am I committing to my work? And honestly, it's very easy for me, you know, in my home surroundings to slide into more domestic goddess stuff when I really could be focusing on doing creative projects or doing marketing or whatever else. But I do feel that when I was working outside the home, there was more of a climate, I would say, where the people I was working with, we all felt like we were making a contribution to society or that what we were doing was valuable or important.
Mm-hmm.
And the place that I get that most often now is through social networking. So when I'm networking with other people who are doing, you know, social media, you know, branding projects, or they're looking for iconic women leaders, which is, you know, something I'm going to be involved in the future, doing some 10-minute mentoring shows on social media. When I'm connecting with other professionals who are of like mind, that's usually when I feel the most valued, you know, not when I've wiped down, you know, the baseboard yeah, for the third time in the last 2 weeks because I've got a dog and two cats.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, whoever it is, whether it's a male or a female that's got those sort of thankless tasks that you have to do time and time again, it's like, okay, dishes in the morning and dishes at night, mail mm-hmm. comes in every day. You know, there, it's just like it's an endless cycle of the same thing.
It never gets done.
Right. It's never, yeah, that old adage, women's work is never done. You know, the whoever's doing home and hearth, yeah, that work does not have a, oh, project completion date.
Right.
No.
Right, right. And honestly and truly, I think, you know, back when All in the Family, I know they just recently did a new... I don't even know what to call it. It wasn't a totally new program, but it was kind of a side-by-side with the old All in the Family and then the new All in the Family. And, you know, the ideas that went along with those kind of shows at the time that they were being shown is that the woman did stay home, and her job went on forever and ever and ever and ever, whereas guys would go out the door and they would complete an assignment. It might take a month or 2 months or 3 months, depending on what it was, but they always had that completion, looking forward to it, and then starting a new project. Whereas she, generally speaking, it was the same routine day in and day out. There might be Monday for laundry and Tuesday for shopping or something, but it was still the same things over and over again. And again, she didn't put herself in the mix usually. So it wasn't time for me that ever got scheduled, and that's part of this whole process of how do we take care of ourselves so that if we have done our job of taking care of us, then there is enough left to help others. So yeah, that's part of this whole process. Being an only child, your mother had a different message for you years later than my mother had for me. So why don't you talk a little bit about the messages that you got from your mom as far as being a female?
Right. I think more than even verbal messages is I come from a strong matriarchal family on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
The women are definitely the leaders in the families on both sides, both in my father's side, matrilineal and patrilineal side.
Uh-huh.
So I grew up watching my mother do it all. I watched her do it. She worked all day. She came home. She cooked, you know, she cooked almost every night. You know, I saw TV dinners, you know, once every 2 weeks or something. But, you know, there was a meat, there was a vegetable, you know, two vegetables, applesauce, whatever. You know, she worked all day. She cooked a meal. And, you know, on Saturdays we cleaned. She did it all. She did do it all. And, you know, because my parents were divorced, I was in the first wave of having divorced parents. So I watched somebody who did it all, and I watched my father's mother, who lived very close to me, you know, geographically, and I spent a lot of time with her, either socially with my mom being there too, or, you know, different family configurations, or me just by myself, and she worked also. So she was, you know, my father's mother, and she had her own business. So my role models were not your average stay-at-home type moms at all. And even in the neighborhood I grew up in, most of the families were two-family, mom and dad, you know, still married type situation, at least until I was about 10 years old. And many of those moms did stay home. At least one, you know, mostly it was the moms who stayed home at that time. And, you know, they did all the domestic goddess stuff, and the husbands made the money, and that's how it went. But that was never my reality. And I was heavily encouraged to grow up and do whatever I wanted to. Now, whether or not I was actually given the skills, where I feel like there was a gap for me in some ways in life skills, because I wasn't spending time around anybody during the day doing that. I was either at school or I was with care providers. I probably learned some of the tangible skills of kitchen activity and stuff like that in the afternoon from care providers that I stayed with, female care providers. So it was a little, you know, kind of a mix like that for me.
Interesting. Yeah, because I mean, my mom basically stayed home and raised us until we were, I don't know, like high school age.
Mm-hmm.
And then she did go back to work as a social worker. And she worked with families for a number of years before she finally retired. So I saw, you know, the work ethic. But I think for the most part, I'm just kind of looking back now, but I'm really thinking for the most part, she and Dad would drive home together because they both worked in the state of Indiana's main building. So he was an accountant for the state of Indiana, and she was a social worker, but their offices were there. And so they would come home together, and I remember Dad helping, you know, like when it came time for the evening meal, you know, he would help do a part of it. So she wasn't just in the kitchen by herself, and he was watching TV. So I guess my role model was okay.
Progressive.
Yeah, progressive, and guys need to assist too. It's not just like Archie Bunker where he went out and sat in his chair and then she called him to the dinner table.
Thank goodness, because it's good that you saw a participating man, so that
mm-hmm.
I'm sure you expected that at some points, that, or you would feel comfortable asking for assistance. And did
right.
you do that in your marriage if you were feeling over?
I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of the time it was offered, but if it wasn't and I was feeling particularly tired or just maybe a little irritated that they were getting to do something that was relaxing and I was still on call.
Right.
That, hey, you know, get your butt in here. You
yeah.
need to help too.
Right.
And it wasn't hard to say that.
Mm-hmm. Good for you. That's awesome.
So by and large, what did you see? Because this is something I didn't get to see, and I don't know whether you got to see it or not. We don't live close to our family of origin very often anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you grow up and you go wherever you're going to go to work, and you go home to visit, and it might be states away.
Right.
So my grandfather died when he was 89. I know Mom and he were very close. Her mother died when Mom was in her, I'm going to say, late 20s, early 30s. So her mother died early in life. And I know that, you know, she was concerned about her dad's health as he got older. I know he was concerned because all of his friends were dying. And so he turned out to be one of the last people to be a survivor of, you know, in this little town where he was well known. So he was always concerned that nobody would be at his funeral. And that actually turned out to be pretty much the case because he had outlived everybody.
Oh, wow.
You know, he
yeah.
did. But that's one of the things that I think our modern day children are not learning from, you know, their relatives. They're not seeing grandparents so much, or even parents as they become adults, if they've gone away and are working in distant cities. So they stay connected through texting, through phone calls, through an occasional visit, but they don't see maybe the decline of somebody's health. They're not there to offer emotional support or physical support when necessary. And did you see any of that?
Oh, yeah. I was actually extremely connected to all my relatives.
That's unusual and good.
Yeah, it was great. And it's so enriching in so many ways. I
mm-hmm.
actually, I had an extra set of grandparents.
How'd you do that?
Well, because my father's father remarried, and so did my father's mother. Okay, so that gave me three sets of, you know, two couples, my father's new wife and my father's mother's new husband.
Okay,
so they were alive a lot of my life. They were alive a lot of my life. And then I did lose my mother's father early. But my mother's, there was sort of this matriarchal thing where it was my mother's mother, my mother's aunt, and my mother's grandmother were alive for a long time as I was growing up.
And they all knew each other?
They all lived together.
Oh, that's awesome.
At a point, yeah. You know, they all ended up together. They all had various and sundry disabilities, and it was easier for the younger people that were helping them out, having them all in one spot, you know, made that work better.
Sure.
So yes, my mother's mother had a stroke, and I, you know, visited her and was in her presence, you know, many times after her stroke. My mother's grandmother, you know, was quite, you know, old, obviously, you know, because she was my great grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
So she, you know, had limited mobility and, you know, needed assistance with many things. And my mother's little brother would take care of things like, you know, shovel the old thing. They would joke around a lot about their infirmities, their oldness. You know, they made light of it. They joked about it. It was definitely not like anybody was trying to cover any of that up or anything like that. You know, so there was a lot of sort of crunchy humor, you know, around those things, which was how to deal with it, you know,
because
it could be depressing.
Right.
So instead of it letting it be depressing, you know, it was a point of sort of, okay, this is what we got going and we're going to deal with it.
Mm.
So, and
they didn't have to deal with it alone. And that's the thing that I think concerns me the most about our very transitory kind of society.
Right.
Is so many times the only choices that are left are hiring visiting angels, putting them in an assisted care facility. But
right.
They have to be there pretty much by themselves.
Right. Well, my grandmother ended up, my father's mother ended up having Alzheimer's.
Mm.
But she was loaded by the time that happened, and she stayed in her house until she passed.
Mm.
So there was care providers came in and took care of her. And everyone knew that she would have wanted to stay in her house, and so that's how it went. So she stayed there till she, you know, her mind left about 7 years before her body. But even so, she sat in her living room and looked at the inland waterway. You know, she had worked hard during her life for that, and everybody thought, well, she deserves to continue to have that. So
right.
That's what she had. So, I was taught a lot of things. That's where I maybe picked up more sort of day-to-day skill stuff than from my parents. I mean, I did learn some of that from my parents. But, you know, when you're doing your, you know, go-to-work, you know, lifestyle, you don't have as much. They weren't with me during the day as much. But if I was traveling to see relatives, like I had a grandmother who sewed with me, or I had, you know, just my other grandmother was not a baking type of grandmother, but she, you know, taught me how to cook a piece of fish, or, you know, so I did actually learn a lot from, you know, the older relatives and felt very loved. Okay, I just felt a huge amount of love. And I had one grandfather who even said to me, if I did anything to mess your dad up and that messed you up, I'm sorry.
Isn't that interesting?
I know. How cool is that?
Yeah.
So he was, you know, there was a lot of awareness, you know, there. And, you know, about the nature of how, you know, mental health trouble can go from one generation to another. And even, you know, he was, I think, doing the best he could to make an amend for that. And that particular grandfather also had told me, if your home life is ever too stressful or crazy for you and you can't take it, you can always come here. So I always had an out. I always had an escape place. Now, whether or not, you know, that would have lasted for any length of time.
Right.
But for a young person, you know, especially when you're becoming a teenager and you're stressed and, you know, life is hard, having that little escape spot, that little place where you could get away and just get a break from whatever it was, having that was great. And it never happened. But just having having somebody say that to me was like a mental relief.
Right. You know, it's plan B.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice to have plan B, even
plan
if
B.
you don't have to use it.
Exactly. Exactly. So women today that are, you know, in their 20s, let's say, I'm not sure that they're going to have some of the skills that you and I have, because we have more and more families that are divided. There's a lot of divorce. It's still over 50% of every marriage ends up in divorce. And not all of them are amicable. And it's kind of like a he said, she said. And I think the kids are more and more isolating themselves with their computers and with their phones. And, you know, so I do have genuine concerns that they're not learning some of these survival skills that will take them into raising their own children, if they have children, or into their middle adult years and beyond, because there is not this family connection that we once had, and there's certainly not the community connection. And so it kind of goes back again to how do you take care of you if there's not, you know, some of these extended family members or friends or community people that are there for you.
Right. I think here's where I had maybe a little bit of an advantage working in human service agencies.
Mm-hmm.
I was more keyed into what kind of supports were out there.
Right.
So although I did not receive child support from my son's father, so my income was tight, but I knew how to find the resources. So for instance, my child, you know, I kept my son in aftercare programs till he was like 13 years old, you know, and he might have been okay on his own before that, but I didn't want him to have to be alone.
Right.
So, you know, I knew that if you got there first at the very beginning of the year to the park and rec department, there were X number of scholarships and you could get your kid into a summer program. Okay, so like I made my son go to summer programs until he was 13. You know, the 2 years before that, he was begging me to let him stay home alone during the summer. And I was like, nope, not happening. So, you know, and the why, I have to say the why was a tremendous help, because there were times when he was younger where I had worked all day and let's say he was in a wild mood, you know, and I couldn't calm him down and we were having stress, but it was, oh, guess what? Taekwondo's coming up in an hour and a half. I'm like, okay, let's get your gi on now. And we'd get right on over there to the Y, and he'd play they had like a kid's room, hang out in the kid's room until it was time for his class, and I hit the hot tub and the pool. So, you know, that was like, you know, he only did Taekwondo for a couple of years, and he you know, graduated in the belts and all that, but it was, you know, it was an opportunity for me to have a break, and he was in a safe environment, you know, where I felt like, you know, he was going to be well cared for. I didn't have to be hovering over him. He was, you know, 8 years old by then. And
so that was your self-care time.
Yeah, that was my self-care time. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. And I think a lot of, again, you knew how to work the ropes, so to speak.
Yes, I did. I absolutely did.
And unfortunately, we do have a lot of families, and I'm going to say whether it's a single parent or otherwise, but we have a lot of them that don't meet the requirements to get into those programs. You know, they either have to pay for it or not. You know, they make too
right,
much money.
Right.
And so they're not eligible.
You know, there's always something. I will say this.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep looking and you have to keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually one of the points that I was going to make,
mm-hmm.
okay, before. Do not set yourself up to not have self-care because you think you don't have the money to do it.
Right.
Don't believe that. As soon as you believe, oh, I don't have the money to take care of myself, then you're not going to stay open to the little possibility of how it's going to show up for you.
Mm-hmm.
If you set the intention that I know it's important to take care of myself because I have to be my best self for my family and so that we can keep hanging in there. It's a long-term plan. You know, we're not going for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. We're going for now 25 years to raise a kid.
Right.
Okay, it's
right.
25 years now, not 18. You're in it for 25 years.
Because they're staying home.
Because even when they go to college, they're coming back because
yep.
they can't support themselves. So
right.
you're in this for 25 years. So you really have to have a strategic long-term plan of how you're going to keep yourself together for that whole entire time and do as at least above average. You know, I think most people would like to at least consider themselves above average parents, you know, average or above. Can I just get that? And so I, you know, like I had talked to you before in other shows, you know, there were times when I took retreats at my friend's houses who were out of town. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not talking fancy houses. I'm talking another single mom who happened to get the money to go visit her relatives one Christmas because somebody helped her out. And now her one bedroom apartment's going to be empty for 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? That's where I went on retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wasn't spending a lot of money for that retreat, but the value of the quiet time away from
mm-hmm.
crazy town, you know, and all of the hubbub of taking care of animals and going back and forth to work just between Christmas and New Year's for, you know, 3 nights and 4 days. That's how I kept my head together.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be, you know, a lot of different little things. Like, I was trying to think about how it worked out, but it was like just little small opportunities, or let's say pet sitting, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you just need to, you know, just having a little time to get away. And here's where sometimes I feel almost worse for women who have an intact family, is sometimes I think the perception is that if you have a husband, you are already getting help, okay? But that may or may not be the case.
Right. And I would say probably half of the time it is not the case.
Right. So those women who are not getting any breaks, okay, mm-hmm. it's almost like if you're a single mom, people get it that you need a break sometime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I know when I was growing up with my mom, there were times like I went to visit her brother for a month in the summer. I went to visit my aunt in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that gave my mom a break.
Right.
You know, so I guess because I saw that she had breaks, maybe I thought it was okay for me to have breaks.
Right.
I don't know. And I didn't really conceptualize those times as a break for her when it was happening. I was having a happy, fun time trip deal. But, you know, later when I reflected back and I think, oh, how did she do it? I was like, oh yeah, I used to go visit people in the summer, you know,
mm-hmm.
not all the time, but
mm-hmm.
some of the time, which, or I went to summer camp, you know, 1 year, my grandfather sent me to summer camp. Another year, my dad paid for summer camp. So, you know, these were times when my mom could just, you know, get her head back together.
Right. Right. That's interesting. I think, I don't know, again, I don't know how often that happens. I have a friend, that is, not too far from me, and she has grandchildren that are here.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just, she picks them up after school,
right,
and spends time with them while mom and dad are finishing out their workday.
Mm-hmm.
And she still works, you know, part time, but it gives her a chance to bond with the grandchildren and vice versa. And it gives, you know, the parents a chance to breathe, before they have to, you know, get home and fix dinner for the kids. And so that pretty much works for them. But a lot of grandparents live out of state,
right?
You know, so in the sense that, yes, you might be able to go for a month. That would be wonderful. I used to go visit my grandfather and relatives for several weeks every summer. And I never did think about it as a break for mom because I was there helping her with my brothers. But it was wonderful, you know, for me to be away. And when you go home, you're appreciated more for what you do. It's not that you're just, you know, another person there to take up space, but wow, you know, tell me about what you did. And gee, that sounds like a lot of fun. And, you know, can you help with this? And it all works, you know, a little bit better down the road.
Well, having the diversity of experience too, you know, for the child is so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I had one set of relatives that were Georgia and another that were Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
So that really helped me see how people who live in different places in this country,
right,
have different ways and accept that. You know, so that gave me a kind of a, you know, a head start on diversity and inclusion and understanding, you know, just little social cultural norms being different and stuff like that.
Yeah, it gave you exposure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For sure.
Yep.
For sure. Well, I want to talk a little bit about the physical problems, because a lot of times on the show, when we do talk about nutrition, but there are physical problems for people that don't take care of themselves. And I don't mean just on the food that they eat, although that can be a contributing factor if you're just... there was a Hallmark show I was watching a couple of nights ago, and I was chuckling because her dinner one night was cupcakes and another night it was popcorn. So if anybody's been watching Hallmark, you know what show it was. But I thought that is so true. If your life is stressed, you might feed everybody else, but you take a bite off of your kid's plate. You know, I'll have a bite of this and a bite of that, and that's enough. And, you know, that nutritionally is not enough on a cellular level to keep you healthy. And there are two things that will happen with women. One is their thyroid. And my mom, having the three of us pretty close together, had thyroid issues where you're exhausted all the time. And you think you're exhausted because you're so busy with your children and the house and maybe job and everything else too. But it could also be that you're stressing out your thyroid gland. The other one are your adrenal glands. And your adrenal glands sit on top of your kidneys, for all of you out there that aren't sure where they are. And certainly when you are stressed, you have what's called adrenal fatigue. And it's like you're walking around in a zombie fashion, because you just do not have the energy or the wherewithal to think about anything. So you're kind of holding your hand up on this one. We're not on television, so you can't see that. But so you've suffered from the adrenal fatigue.
I do. That's why I have coffee over here at 5 o'clock.
At 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're recording, but this is a morning show, but it's not morning right now. Yeah, and I'm struggling with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know I take a nutritional supplement pretty
mm-hmm.
much every day. Maybe
mm-hmm.
not every day, but
mm-hmm.
I've been doing that for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And it does make a huge difference.
Right.
But part of, for me, the adrenal fatigue came from I tend to keep my foot on the accelerator and the brake simultaneously.
Oh.
And
you're one of those drivers.
yeah, in my psyche, you know. And it's hard for me to really let go of things, and I'm just learning how to relax at 55,
mm-hmm.
honestly, in
mm-hmm.
terms of allowing life to present itself to me and unfold. And I did have a lot of responsibility. You know,
mm-hmm.
I had professional jobs that were low pay and high demand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, in nonprofit jobs, they expect you to do more with less until you can do everything with nothing. And I got very good at that. And I'm good at it at home, too. And I'm good at it with other people, and people recognize that. And so whose door do they knock on, or who do they call?
Right.
You know, it's me. Or who do they message on Facebook?
Right.
So, you know, I'm a good problem solver. I know how to find the resources in the community,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's good. I'm glad I know how to do that. But at the same time, I don't think that I realized what the limitations of my body were early enough. I wish I had had more data and more a bigger understanding that, like, once I went through menopause, my whole energy level was likely to shift. I didn't have that information at the front end. I did have a lot more information about body, mind, spirit than a lot of other people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, women are not prepared in advance for, oh, once you go through menopause, you can expect a dip in your energy level. I never heard that before I went through menopause. Okay, so afterwards, I had like a 35% dip, and I'm like, what? You know, my energy was already starting to dip because of the adrenal fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
And then once those hormones were there, you know, dropping out, once the testosterone is not there to drive the estrogen and the progesterone, then my energy level dropped even more. And then the brain fog set in. So what really, yeah. So what really got me interested in the supplement was I tried it. I was with some other people, and I was actually it was a Theta Healing seminar, and
mm-hmm.
somebody who was there with me had brought their stuff from home, and they're, hey, you want to try it? I'm like, yeah, what the heck, I'll try it. Well, I felt my brain turn on for the first time in a real long time, in about 10 minutes. And apparently there were amino acids and other things that my brain needed to function. And when they got there, I was like, whoa, it only took 10 minutes. 10 minutes after ingesting the supplement, I could feel my brain sort of focus in. And I was like, wow, okay, obviously I need this stuff.
Right.
And it took me a while to get regular with it. But then now I don't do it every single day, but I would say 5 out of 7 days I take the supplement. And I'm
mm-hmm.
pretty religious about it.
Right.
And
I don't think people understand, you know, they think that they can eat healthy enough. But even with organic foods, this is not true any longer. When we lived on farms and we grew our own, you know, produce, and it went from land, ground to table, you still had nutrition in your food. We don't have a lot of nutrition in our food anymore. So even if you shop the periphery of the store, you're still not getting what you need to get in your body. And that's one of the reasons that we talk about, you know, boomers on the show, is the boomer products have just this amazing ability to turn somebody's life around for them on a health level, because they aren't getting the minerals, the vitamins, the amino acids. They're not getting some of the things that will repair on a cellular level. So as you age, and one of the things that will happen to every single one of you listening is your cells will begin to die, and you cannot replace them fast enough anymore. It was described to me, and I think it's a very good visual to keep in mind, is we're like a log. And as we age, we burn from both ends. So it's not just burning from one end, but it's actually going to meet in the middle eventually if you don't begin to take things that will supplement on that cellular level. So it is very, very interesting. Another thing I want to touch base on too is, as a woman, I think less for men, quite honestly. I think there are a lot of silver fox men out there that are just absolutely amazing. If they get on high blood pressure medication or something like that, you know, their libido certainly is affected. But men typically age better than women.
Sure, because they've got they still have testosterone.
Testosterone, yeah. Mm-hmm. And as a result, you know, women have a tendency, if they're going through a divorce, if their spouse dies, but I find that, you know, as I'm kind of looking around at women that are my age, if they are single, either through divorce or the death of a spouse, if they haven't taken care of themselves, if they don't have that energy anymore, that spark that makes them enjoy life, then they begin to become recluses. You know, they stay in more and more and more. They don't have maybe as many female friends that are available to do things with. If there is a couple, the female part of that couple doesn't really enjoy having another single female around, for maybe obvious reasons, if their marriage isn't going too well. And so it's very fascinating to be in this age group now, and to be observing all of this.
Right, what goes on.
What goes on with this. And so women become a lot more fearful of being alone. And I know, you know, down in different parts of the Tampa, St. Pete area, there's different retirement complexes, you know, 55 and over. And I think some of them make a big difference. I mean, if you move from, let's say, your condo where you live into a 55-plus community, you at least have opportunities to do things with others, whether it's cards or going to a show or, you know, things like that. But if they live by themselves, you know, that whole fear of the what-ifs, you know, what if I fall in the middle of the night? What if, you know, I am no longer mobile? You know, how do I take care of me? So again, that goes back to this whole self-care, and maybe you want to address what you see happening.
Well, I want to just hop back a little bit to what are some things that happen to women when they're trying to cope with this, they're taking care of everyone else.
Right.
Okay, they can end up, like with the adrenal or thyroid issues, they can also get into eating disorders and alcohol and drug overuse.
Sure.
And I know two women that I respect so much in so many ways, but they are both definitely abusing alcohol in their day-to-day lives.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And it drives me crazy because I know how dangerous that truly is and how much is being robbed out of their life.
And they don't see it?
Oh, no. I think they just don't know what else to do. This is just, it's a coping mechanism, okay? It's in order to support all that other stuff that they're doing, they have to do this. And they're not ready or able to ship the other things around enough. I think there's a fear or something about what will happen if I stop doing all of those things and actually take care of myself.
So it's easier to ignore it through drugs or alcohol?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I like I said, I know two women right now that are fairly close in my circles that their drinking does really concern me. Mm. And,
you know what, a friend and I just saw a movie called A Dog's Journey. Do you remember A Dog's Purpose a few years ago? No, you didn't go see it. It's
no.
A tearjerker, but I'm an animal lover, so. But A Dog's Journey picks up where the other one took off, and there's a dog named Bailey, and Bailey dies. And the idea is that the dog keeps coming back in a different dog and hooking up because the father of Bailey, as Bailey's dying, he tells Bailey, you've got to come back and take care of my granddaughter.
Aww.
And so the dog, you know, is reborn and becomes Molly, and Molly is a little dog, and Molly is going to take care of the granddaughter. But the reason I'm saying this is that her mother is an alcoholic for a big part of the show, and that's because her husband died in an automobile accident. And so here she is, 8 months pregnant. Her husband is gone. She's living with her in-laws and trying to raise this baby for several years. And the only way she even knows how to cope is through alcohol.
Right.
And so, unfortunately, this little girl grows up with an alcoholic mother. And, you know, so I think, you know, coping with alcohol or drugs is very, very common.
Yeah, it is. And so that's something that goes along also with depression,
mm-hmm.
because alcohol is a depressant.
Right.
And so once somebody is in that cycle of I'm depressed, but I'm using alcohol to cope with it, it just fuels the cycle more and more and more.
Right.
So anyhow, I didn't want to hop over that because I felt like that's an important thing to say is that, you know, it's sort of to me, there's many reasons why people turn to drugs and alcohol, but alcohol in the Chinese system is a yin energy, okay?
Okay.
And people need R&R, surrender, the two R's in surrender, rest and relaxation. And our culture doesn't really support rest and relaxation. We're supposed to be doing and productive and creative and making money and blah, blah, blah. And this is, you know, where the pulling back from the meditative way of being or the quiet resting,
mm-hmm.
The waiting for things to happen instead of making everything happen or feeling like you have to be on top of every little thing,
right.
Or the over-programmed child. You know, in former times, kids went out and played in the field and moms at least had some quiet time where kids were out playing, you know?
That's true.
And now they're, you know, feeling like, you know, they have to get from their job, go home, get the kid, get their soccer stuff on, zoom to the soccer field, you know, drive through the drive-thru, throw some french fries and burger in the kid's face, grab the kid, go to the soccer field, go back, you know, it's just like, woo! And that is stress. That
yes.
is stress. And so, you know, I think it's just, I don't know, it's sort of like it all feeds on all of it. It's like a negative synergy.
Right.
And I think once you're in it, it's sort of like it's an obsessive compulsive lifestyle that you're just in, you're in, you're in.
And you don't know how to get out.
Exactly. And so I think when you know, it sometimes takes like a real near miss,
mm-hmm.
you know, a big car accident, a huge health crisis, something major sometimes for people to get out of that tight, you know, in order to reevaluate
mm-hmm.
and figure out, okay, what are we doing that we really don't need to be doing?
Right.
What are our priorities? How can we shift things around so that we're not just running like that really, really tight, you know, gerbil cage?
Right. No, that's very, very true. Well, I want to explore a couple of other things in the few minutes that we have left. So I'm going to talk about something that is a comparison, actually, and that's self-love at a soul level. And so I figured with your mindfulness background and everything else, you might be able to address some of that. So how do we love who we are at that soul level?
You know, I was thinking about this today, too, this morning, that deep self-love. What, you know, where does real self-care come from? How do we know what we need to do to really take care of ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
You know, below the level of, you know, the right food, exercise, blah,
right,
blah, whatever.
Right.
And I really feel that you have to spend time feeling your feelings and identifying your needs in order to really know what you, to know what to ask for,
mm-hmm.
to know what to ask yourself to give you.
Like taking time to say, what do I need?
Yes, what do I need? And
mm-hmm.
for me, you know, one of the systems that I really enjoy is that Rosenberg's nonviolent communication, because that's talking with yourself. And the way he says is, you know, feelings light up your needs. So let's say you're feeling discouraged. Okay, well, you know, obviously if you're feeling discouraged, you need encouragement. You know, so that is...
And where do you go get your encouragement?
Exactly. How am I... What am I saying to myself? What is my self-talk? You
mm-hmm.
know, the biggest thing, of course, is the self-talk.
Right.
But then you could also, if you have willing people around you, you could say, you know, I'm really discouraged about blah, blah, blah. Could you give me some words of encouragement?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some people we can count on for
right.
those things.
Exactly.
So, but if we don't take the time to tune in to what's going on inside ourselves, then we really can't know what's going to give us the most deep level of satisfaction.
And I'm going to use a visual for everybody out there listening, and that's a merry-go-round. And so if you're sitting on the merry-go-round and you just keep going around and around and around and around and doing the same thing over and over again, you're not going to be able to tap into that soul love space. So you literally, the merry-go-round's going to continue, but you have to decide you're getting off.
Right, and it's you know, we tend to identify at the beginning of a meditative life, we identify with the I as our personality, our name, our body, our, you know, what we, how we, whatever our job is, our kids, our family. You know, as you meditate more and you connect more and more with whatever part of us was here before we got here and will be here once we leave, that energetic essence,
right?
You know, as we identify with that more, I think it's, it helps us slow down. In fact, somebody that I watch on social media in this area, actually, who I identify with, was talking about this. The more you identify with who you are at the soul level, the less need for speed you'll have.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be able to have a bigger view.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what is my little soul lesson for the next, you know, for this juncture in my life, the next 5 years,
mm-hmm.
instead of, you know, I have to make it to the top of the caterpillar heap, you know,
right.
like, you know, what's that book?
Hope for the Flowers.
Yeah, Hope for the Flowers. Yeah, you're not just climbing to the top of the caterpillar leaf. You're like, okay, what is my personal success?
Right.
You know, instead of defining your self-worth or your success by, you know, whatever Madison Avenue says it should be, you know, it's what is it inside myself that I most want to be liberated from, or I'm interested in discovering.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, defining success on your own terms takes reflection, and it takes quietness, and it
and
takes
the time part.
Yeah.
You have to stop.
Right.
And sit with yourself for a little bit. And if you can, you know, I mean, if it's nice enough outside and there's a breeze, or you can go to the beach and sit on a towel, but it's just slowing down, watching your breath, going inside, and kind of saying, what would make me happy? What do I need in my life? And then listening. And we don't know how to listen very well anymore either. So listening to yourself is a skill, and listening to others is as well.
Oh, definitely. And there's a lot of ways to get into that. Like, sometimes it's not right there on the surface, but, you know, there's all kinds of wonderful books and resources that are, you know, like journaling, you know, journal prompts are a great way to go down beneath the surface,
right.
You know, or for me, you know, I use the Voyager Tarot as a mindfulness tool, okay, and I will pull a card and say, okay, how do I become the star that I am today? Pull that card out, and oh, it's the Sun card. Okay, what does the Sun card mean? That means showing up and putting it out there and being bright. Okay, so maybe I've been like a hermit. Maybe I've been too hermity, and I pulled that Sun card out, and I'm like, oh, okay, got it. I need to shine out a little bit more.
Yeah. And if you don't have those prompts, you're not really sure of what to do. So that's kind of a cool way to do it. I mean, I know I used to tell people to journal, but I like pulling a card a day too, because you never know what the universe is going to have you pull.
Right. And Wanla says the cards don't lie, but the cards don't do. So essentially, you know, when you're really willing to say, okay, I trust the universe, I trust that there's some infinite intelligence here, and I'm gonna pay attention to what this answer is, then you know, that takes courage.
Yes,
and
it does.
It takes a willingness to let go of a certain amount of control and be open. And you know, there's some risk involved there. But those of us, and when you, you know, if you haven't tried it, you should try it. It's like once you do it and it works out, then you're like, wow, this is really cool. You know, it sort of gets you hooked.
Right. Absolutely. Okay, I want to touch on one more thing. I think we can maybe wrap it up with this one. But I came across something that I found very, very interesting, and that was understanding what it means to reestablish a connection to nature's rhythms. And I wanted your thoughts on that. I know I have certain thoughts, but I'm going to open it to you initially here, because the natural rhythm of life, as we look at it, and what is that actually saying? Because that's another way to take care of ourselves. You know, we're not always going to be at exactly the same place year in and year out.
Right. There's a time for every season and blah, blah, that thing, however that goes. But yeah, interesting, because Wandless also has a deck called the Sustain Yourself deck, and it's all nature stuff.
Oh, how cool.
And it's all nature wisdom.
And do you order that online, or is it in stores?
You can get it. You can get it online, or you can go to james-wandless.com and get the deck from him. I use that deck in my Baking Bowl Belief with my Voyager Tarot and my White Squirrel deck, all Wandless cards. But the nature thing for me, I didn't know how important it was until I wasn't in that. Mm-hmm. I worked for a while where I worked till late at night, and it was draining me. Because mm-hmm. I was out of the diurnal, you know, the diurnal nocturnal shit thing, and mm-hmm. I was eating late at night, and then mm-hmm. I was up till 2 or 3 in the morning consistently. Mm-hmm. And just so folks know, you get more yin nourishing sleep before midnight. Okay, so your feminine energy refills in your sleep between 9:30, 10 o'clock, and 12. Mm-hmm. So if you don't get that, you're not getting yin nourishment.
Right.
And most of the time, we're still in the United States more yang dao. We still need more yin, even though it's the dawning of the divine feminine. We're still coming into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's interesting, because I would bet that the majority of people that have jobs and have a family, they're not even beginning to finish up the dishes until maybe 8 o'clock at night. And at that point, it's getting the kids, while school was on, now school is out, but, you know, while school was on, getting the kids bathed, clothes out, you know, the homework all put together so they can head out the door in the morning. And they might have a half hour before 10 o'clock. And they're not ready. I mean, they're still moving at a higher pace.
They're still moving down. Yeah. They're still coming down, yeah.
So, you know, there's so many different things about, you know, stay away from the computer after a certain time of night. You need to not be looking at that kind of screen for a good hour. They prefer 2 hours before going to sleep. A lot of people have televisions in their bedroom, which is a horrible thing to do to your body. So there's a lot to be said for that. But that whole natural rhythm, I know here in Florida, people don't quite get into it the way we did in Wisconsin. But as the days would get shorter, you know, and you start putting on a few more layers of clothes, there is that sense of nurturing the body. So, you know, making soups, making chilies, making stews, comfort foods, you know, and of course they've had an incredibly long winter in most places that they're just coming out of now. And then we move into summer, and it's lighter things, salads, soup, maybe a light broth of some sort if you want a soup, fish, you know. But if you ask your body what it needs on all of those different levels, it also puts you back into the natural rhythm of things. And so, yes, you might need more sleep. Are you listening to what your body says? Yes, you might need to eat lighter because it's hotter outside. Yes, you might need to, you know, take longer walks so that you can do a little breathing exercise or a little meditation in your walking. Yes, you might need to journal. But there's a lot of different ways that you truly can begin to take care of yourself without going into any major expense. And it's mostly time. It's just taking a few minutes. And for those that are listening, you know, taking even just 15 minutes in the morning. I used to recommend to people get up 15 minutes earlier and do some yoga stretching. You know, maybe do your journaling at that point. Start your day off with a positive message for yourself.
Yeah, the daily readers are great too. Mm-hmm. Any kind of a daily reader where yep. you just get a message for the day is a good way to get started.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't, again, there's no major expense. There's not a lot of time involved. But your body, your soul, your spiritual self will thank you 100 times over for just giving it a little bit of attention. And your family as well, I think, you know, because they will notice the difference that you start each day and end each day in a better place.
Yeah, because the thing is, we get into habits of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything we can do to step back from those habits of mind gives us more freedom and creativity in how we approach everything.
Right, right. Well, again, I appreciate your being here with me. It's always fun, and this was a topic, as I mentioned, that it's not necessarily for females. There are more females that are involved in the overall caregiving of children and family members and coworkers and good friends. I mean, you know, it's just learning to take some time for yourself. And if you're a guy, learning to take time for you is equally important, because what you bring to the party is how you take care of you. And if you aren't taking care of you, you can't bring a whole lot. So that's kind of the mission here. If you miss the live show, Then you'll be able to go to my website at synergyconnectionradio.com. It will be posted later in the afternoon on the day that the show airs. And in the meantime, I know Kristen will be back in the future with us for other shows. Please check out the Boomers Forever Young products. There's a ton of information on my website, and you can go directly to their website and watch videos and read some of the blogs about these amazing products. They can make a difference in your overall health. But in the meantime, I hope that everyone has a wonderful day and go out there and make this your best life.